This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Tired of not getting a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, y'all, you're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. Sam Sanders here. And before we start the show, I want to say I hope everyone in Texas and elsewhere experiencing the power outages and winter weather is doing okay and surviving the best they can. Some of y'all might know I am from San Antonio, Texas, and a lot of you have asked. My family and friends down there, they're doing okay. Also, my Aunt Betty, who is experiencing winter weather in a different part of the country, she's all right too. And as of this past week, she is fully vaccinated against the coronavirus. So today we're going to talk more about that, the vaccine, and answer some of y'all's questions about how it all works. To start, we're going to hear my Aunt Betty's vaccine story. Betty, hi.
Hi, Sam.
How are you?
I am, for a snowy day in Delaware, I'm very well.
You, Aunt Betty, are fully vaccinated against coronavirus. Hooray, hooray, hooray.
Yes, I am. Thank God for that. I got my first shot about a month ago and my second shot Monday of this week.
Okay. And then describe the scene for you getting the shots. How'd you do it?
Well, the first shot was at the DMV, and it was just like a mad genius had set it up because it worked like clockwork. So you kind of drove up and they routed you to a parking area. Then they would just come through and send you to another parking area. And then when you moved again, you went through a checkpoint where they took your paperwork and checked your ID and asked you a few questions about your health. The next stop was a shot. So I rolled my window down and got a shot and kept rolling. They did ask me to go to another holding area for 15 minutes where medical staff just walked around to see if you were okay.
And you were okay?
Okay, I was fine.
Okay. What advice would you give for people who haven't gotten the vaccine yet and may soon be able to do it?
Do it. It's worth it. I mean, save your life or save yourself some suffering. I know people who've died from it. And
you know a few folks that have died from it. Yeah.
I do. Yeah. They suffered greatly before they died. So I don't wish that on people.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the details that you haven't said yet about your vaccine story is that you heard about how to get it, where to get it from Zoom church. Is that what you told me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I haven't gone back to church yet, so I'm still enjoying services online. And so my pastor is very civic minded, and so he talked about this, and I was, as soon as the service was over, I was like at the house, keys in hand, heading to the DMV to get my shot.
Wow.
So I wouldn't have known about it if I hadn't been online listening to him.
You know what the moral of this story is, Betty?
What is the moral of the story?
I need to go to church.
You didn't need a story to tell you that.
Oh, we got to go to break. You're fading. Well, on that note, I'm glad you're vaccinated. Can't wait to get mine. As you usually do, kick off the show with your iconic catchphrase.
All right, let's start the show.
That sounded very vaccinated. I like it.
Good.
Hey, y'all. Today on the show, we are talking vaccines for the novel coronavirus. As you just heard, my Aunt Betty was able to get one. Maybe someone in your family has gotten the vaccine by now as well. And if so, we are happy for them. You know, things are starting to look up. But there are still a lot of questions out there about how the vaccine works. And of course, we're all wondering when things can return to normal as more and more people get the vaccine every day. So, to guide us through everything, we turned to an old friend of the show. She's actually helped us with coronavirus-related questions before. My dear friend,
ooh,
Maddie Sofia, how are you? Welcome back to the show.
I'm doing well, Sam. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. I feel like the last time we had you on, seems like forever ago. But I think my biggest question with coronavirus was whether I could still pet other people's dogs.
Oh, that's interesting. That's an interesting version of that story, because it was about whether or not you could kiss them on the mouth, is how I remember it.
That is Maddie Sofia. She is the host of NPR's daily science podcast, Shortwave.
I remember you asking me if you could kiss them. Pet them, maybe. Yeah, but it came into play. You're kissing stranger dogs on the mouth.
Not too often. Not too often. I promise you. Over the past few weeks, we have asked you, our listeners, to send in your questions about the vaccine. We're going to answer some of those now. But before we get to those, I first had to ask Maddie about something else. This is my best Seinfeld voice. What is the deal with double masking?
Was that honestly, okay? It was pretty good. It was okay. I was scared okay. for Thank you, and then I thought it went pretty well. Yeah.
All right.
So for a while now, we've known that like wearing a mask can protect you and the people around you, right? We've known that for a while. But I think recently there's been a lot more interest in this question of double masking. And so some folks at the CDC actually did some experiments around this, and it turns out that double masking or other modifications that just make the mask fit better really do make a difference. So it's all about trying to eliminate those little gaps around your chin and your nose and your cheeks. Now, Sam, before I get into it, you have to keep in mind that these experiments were done in a lab on some creepy-looking CDC dummies. I don't know where they got them. not on, like, actual people making their way through the real world. But the results were still pretty convincing, so I feel comfortable talking about it.
Okay,
so there are a bunch of different ways to make your mask fit better, and it's kind of hard to visualize without seeing it. So, you know, don't worry about taking notes or anything right now. We have resources for you to look at.
Also, if you don't get it all on the first time, play this episode again like 4 or 5 times, because that's really good for us, too.
Yeah, and from different devices, download it on different devices and listen to it a bunch.
No, but also we will include a link to a special NPR guide on improving mask fit. Has a bunch of helpful pictures and such. That'll be in the, what's the word?
Episode notes.
Yes. All right. With that, go ahead, Maddie.
So first up, they looked at how to improve medical or surgical masks. So not like the big, intense respirator masks or N95 masks. I mean, just the, you know, like kind of thin, often they're blue surgical masks.
I got the blue ones.
You know, Sam,
these
that one
that we... Grey's Anatomy masks.
Yeah, I was just about to say, you know it from Grey's Anatomy, because for some reason you are watching that show in the year 2021.
Yes, for Shonda. I'm doing it for Shonda.
For Shonda.
Love
okay.
her.
So those have great filtration, but they don't fit very tightly on your face, right? Mm. And so the particles can kind of sneak through those little gaps around your cheeks or your nose. So mm-hmm. the researchers found that if you added a cloth mask over top of that surgical mask, that improves the fit and increases protection from those little tiny aerosols we worry about quite a bit.
So I did this last week, Maddie, and
yeah.
I was a little worried at first because I've had the blue ones for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, if I put one of my cloth ones on top of it, will I be able to breathe?
Yes.
But I was able to breathe.
I was about to say, you're here now, alive, breathing fine. Yeah. Yeah,
yes.
It is. You just have to make sure that none of these alterations, like, get your nose peeking out or your mouth. So anytime you're trying to refit your mask, you just have to make sure when you're trying to do this, you just have that nose and that mouth covered really well. And that's kind of the name
okay.
of the game.
Okay. All right. Mask check. Question number two. And this came to us from a lot of listeners. If folks are able to get the vaccine, can they still carry and transmit coronavirus to other people?
Okay, so let's start off with what we know for sure, right? We know that the vaccines that are authorized in the U.S. do an excellent job of preventing symptoms of COVID, including those really scary severe symptoms. Mm. And let's just take a moment here on this show to acknowledge how monumental that is. I mean, that means fewer cases that result in hospitalizations, finally giving our healthcare workers a break. That means less people dying every day. I mean, that in itself is huge, and that's what the vaccines were designed and tested to do. So as far as whether or not a vaccinated person could have the virus in their bodies and pass it to somebody else, even if they don't get sick, there is some early, and I mean like really early data that looks promising. Some that shows that vaccinated people are less likely to have the virus in their body at all, or they carry less virus. So that's all very good news, but we still don't have enough data to say for sure that the vaccine cuts down on transmission or by how much. So for now, we just kind of have to wait, which means that vaccinated folks should still mask up when they're interacting with people outside their household, especially if those people are unvaccinated.
If we know that the vaccine will protect you from getting severe symptoms, most
yeah.
likely,
mm-hmm.
is it safe for two people who are fully vaccinated to hug? Or like hang out in the same room?
Yeah. Okay. So here's what I will say about this. Because we don't know for sure if vaccinated people can carry the virus, those vaccinated people just need to think about who else they are interacting with, right? So if you are living at home with somebody who is severely immunocompromised, who mm-hmm. isn't vaccinated, mm-hmm. you would treat the situation differently than if you lived by yourself, right? But if you are two vaccinated people, maybe you're even wearing masks for that added layer of risk reduction, I think you've reduced risk enough, you know, to hug it out, especially if you are two people that don't have, like, close contact with other people. I am a big proponent of risk reduction that still allows us to have some of our humanity, right?
And Permission to hug requested.
You know, two vaccinated people hugging, I would argue, is one of those situations. People will argue with me, but I would say so.
Stay with us. Coming up, more of your vaccine questions answered with NPR's Maddie Sofia.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Here's a familiar situation. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. When you keep your stress bottled up, it can eat away at you. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to make them better. Try BetterHelp Online Therapy, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp at betterhelp.com/NPR today to get 10% off your first month.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's teladochealth/whatsyourwhy.
In recent mass shootings, people have been targeted for who they are or who they worship. But on June 28, 2018, people were targeted for the job they do at a newspaper. Listen to the new series from NPR's Embedded about the survivors at the Capital Gazette.
You know, there are so many headlines. It seems like every day there's a new variant of the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. Who knows where they're coming from? How effective is the vaccine against other and newer variants of coronavirus?
So this is a great question. Another great question. Another stumper. You know, I wish your listeners would throw me a couple easy ones once in a while, but, you know, they're too
good.
How
do you spell coronavirus? Let's do that.
So what I would say is this is another situation where things are developing, right? We didn't know about these variants like a month or two ago. But there are some data that suggests that the vaccine might not work as well for a few of those variants. But at this point, you know, most of the experts that we're talking to say they will still work, right? Like, that's the beauty of having vaccines that are super, super effective, that even if they don't work as well against one variant, they will still provide protection. In fact, public health officials are saying that the best way to prevent these variants from really taking off in the U.S. is by having as many people vaccinated as possible. So for now, with the variants that we're seeing in the U.S., it looks like the vaccines will work well on most of them and still provide some protection on the others, which is good news.
All right. As more and more people in my circles get the vaccine, I'm starting to hear them talk to me about side effects. Mm-hmm. And a few folks I know said first dose was fine.
Yeah.
Second dose, I was like knocked out for a day or two.
Yeah, yeah.
What in general are the side effects of the vaccine?
Yeah, this is a great question. I mean, I'm just really glad we're talking about side effects because I think it's important to talk about them and be transparent. So all vaccines can cause side effects, right? And that's because vaccines work by kickstarting your immune system, similar to what would happen with a natural infection. So if you do get side effects, like you get a little bit of swelling from the shot or you get a mild fever, that is just your immune system doing exactly what we want it to do. Now, rarely vaccines do cause more serious reactions, like allergic reactions, for example. So it's really important to talk, you know, about allergies with your doctor before getting the vaccine. Or, you know, if you get the shot and swelling gets worse after a day, or if your other symptoms are getting more severe, lasting more than a few days, you should call the doctor. But the overwhelming majority of the time, Sam, for the two vaccines that are authorized for use in the U.S., The most common symptoms are pain at that site of injection, swelling, as well as fevers, chills, aches, feeling tired. And some people experience very little of those symptoms. And some feel pretty uncomfortable, like you said, for a few days, especially after that second shot. Because that first shot, your immune system's like, oh, hey, what's up? What's up? What's going on? And that second shot was like, oh, you,
like, oh,
again.
You want to move
watch
in
this.
Now. Oh, my
yeah,
goodness.
Yeah, like now you're trying to cut. So that is really your immune system really being kicked into action. So like you said, I've heard of people that need to take the day off after that second shot.
Huh.
But here's the thing, Sam. Those types of side effects go away, right?
Okay.
And you know what doesn't always go away after a few days?
Let me take
COVID,
a guess. COVID,
Sam.
You're right.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So I think it's important to be transparent about vaccine side effects, but also to remind people, like, for the overwhelming majority, this is not even as close to being as bad as a bad case of COVID.
Mm. All right, next question for you. Let's say your grandparent has been vaccinated, but you, a younger person, have not. Can you still see them?
Mm.
And is this scenario a little bit safer for the more vulnerable person?
Okay, so this is a good one because it's all about assessing levels of risk. And like I said, you know, risk is not an all or nothing scenario. And there's a lot to work through to make these types of decisions. So let's walk through this example. So you've decided you really, really want to see your grandparent, right? Your grandparent has been vaccinated, so you've cut the risk of them getting that bad case of COVID down quite a bit. And that's big, right? You know, before going, I would probably try to quarantine for a while myself, especially if they are in a nursing home, because I don't want to bring COVID into that facility because I'm not just going to interact with my grandparent. You know, if they're in their own house, maybe that's a different story. So that's all like before the visit. And then on the day of the visit, one thing I would leave your audience with is when you're seeing anybody, like the thing to think about is how do I cut down on the amount of air I am sharing with people, right? That's the big, if you can carry that one thing in your head, that's the biggest thing because most transmission happens in close contact through the air, not through necessarily like groceries or stuff like that. So that's important to keep in mind. So if I'm going over to my grandmother's, and she makes me call her that, Sam, by the way, the full grandmother. She demands respect. She will not be called grandma. I would be wearing a well-fitted mask like we talked about. And if I could, and this is a huge one, I would try to take it outside if I could. If not, I would want to get fresh air circulating in the room because fresh air circulation is one of the best things you can do if you have to be indoors. And then the last thing to think about is time, right? It's not just proximity, it's also time. So I'd make the visit pretty short, too. I mean, the CDC suggests less than 15 minutes if you're indoors, but that's variable.
But it's grandmother.
Yeah, yes. It is. So it's just about keeping that visit as short as you can. And then after the visit, like I said, same thing as going in. I'd probably quarantine for a bit just to make sure if I got it, you know, somehow from being out and about, I don't spread it.
Gotcha. We are seeing millions of Americans getting the vaccine, which sounds good and feels good. But when do we know that we're there? Like what percentage of the population needs to be vaccinated before you can have herd immunity?
Yeah. So, okay, this is, unsurprisingly, another complicated one. So,
Avril Lavigne over here. Avril Lavigne.
Oh, my God. You know what? I'll take it. I'm not mad at that. I mean, it's not my first choice, but it's not my last. Okay. So, if you're not familiar with this term, herd immunity happens after enough people have been infected or vaccinated until there's essentially nowhere for the virus to go. There's not enough susceptible people left for coronavirus to infect. So there aren't those like massive outbreaks. But there isn't one straightforward number to reach herd immunity. It changes based on a lot of things. The biggest one probably is the germ itself. So for this coronavirus, some public health officials have thrown around that like 70 to 85% of people would need to be vaccinated or infected to have, you know, the level of immunity that we would need. And the difficulty in knowing the answer to your question, Sam, like, when do we reach that number, is that we don't actually even know how many people have gotten the coronavirus. You know, realistically, there's a lot of infections that we don't catch for multiple reasons. There's a lot of people that have asymptomatic infections, you know, that kind of stuff. So That complicates it. We also don't know how long immunity lasts. So for some diseases, you get it once and you're protected for years or your lifetime. And that's probably not what's going to happen with this one.
Really?
And then, you know, we've got those variants on the scene. You've heard of those variants. So those could play a role here, too. So
there's a scenario in which this first round of vaccine that folks get, first two rounds, there'll have to be more vaccine shots down the road?
I mean, there's the potential for that. It would be kind of like a booster situation, perhaps. We don't really know yet. Like I said, right now, it looks like our vaccines are working really well. But I know that there are some vaccine companies that are looking into developing more vaccines that would, you know, basically be kind of a booster situation. So
gotcha.
I think, you know, Sam, when we ask, like, when can we reach herd immunity? When can things go back to normal? You know, I would argue, and people would argue with me again, that herd immunity might not be a reality for this virus. Like, some people might achieve...
It's not that bad.
Some places might achieve something close to it, but this is a global pandemic, right? Like, viruses travel with people who travel. So real herd immunity, you know, global herd immunity would be tough to achieve. And so, you know, I think we have to learn how to live with this virus, to be realistic. You know, the coronavirus will probably be around to some degree for a long time. And so I think focusing on what we can do, you know, getting vaccinated if you can, continue masking up, physically distancing, you know, reducing your risk as much as you can. The more we do those things right now, the faster we will get to our new normal, which, Sam, I'm happy to tell you, will be much, much, much more livable than where we are now.
Last big picture question for you, Maddie. Like, a lot of the answers around these questions are complicated and nuanced, and data and information will change over time as scientists learn more things. But is there any kind of certainty yet, or any kind of forecasting on the uncertainty horizon about what our springs and summers might look like regarding the vaccine? Can you forecast what the next few months might feel like in any way?
Yeah, I mean, it's really tough. I wish I could give you a better idea of this. What I will say is that I understand the question, and it's something that I sit with, you know, every single day. It's really hard, right? Like, not to know when this thing is going to be over, like when things are going to feel better. And what I would say is that these vaccines are going to make a huge difference. You know, when I said we're not going to be coronavirus free, that doesn't mean that it's going to be in our face like this all the time. I mean, it could be something similar to the flu where it, you know, still impacts our lives, but we have systems to live with it. And if these vaccines are rolled out quickly and equitably, I've heard public health officials talking about this fall or maybe more at the end of the year, like really feeling a lot more of a return to normal, even if it's not totally back to normal. But I think more importantly than predicting when it will happen is just, you know, keeping the faith that it will happen, like knowing that this will happen. We will return to this newish normal. And that we have agency, you know, and that we have a say in this. So that's kind of what's getting me through.
Okay. So then in that normal-ish, normal-esque fall, what's the first thing you're going to do in that new normal that you can't do now?
Oof, I don't know, Sam. Oh, I don't know. I'll probably go see my parents, you know, like it would be nice to see my parents. I've never been to the Grand Canyon. I've been thinking about maybe trying to do a little traveling, do a little hiking. What are you going to do, Sam?
You know what I miss?
What?
And what I realize I miss so much? It is gathering with friends and eating.
Yeah.
And I want a nice loungy Saturday where we're either potlucking or the best cook is cooking and like 10 or 12 of us just like hang out for a few hours and eat and drink together.
I miss
that so much.
I miss being
breaking
really
bread.
Breaking bread. I miss being really stressed before people came over my house. You know what I mean? Like, I'm looking forward to that.
You know what I miss the most? And this is so weird. I miss that weird, stressful feeling of when you say to all your friends, come over around 8, we'll do stuff, and then no one gets there till 8:30,
Yeah.
That half hour of anxiety before your friends show up for the party, I miss that.
I know. Isn't it amazing that we can miss different types of nervous, you know?
Yes. Thanks again to Maddie Sofia. She is the host of NPR's daily science podcast, Shortwave. Yes, NPR has a daily science podcast. Go check it out wherever you get your podcasts. All right, coming up, we get a glimpse of that bright and shining post-pandemic future by talking to someone who is living that life right now, thousands of miles away.
This message comes from NPR sponsor REI Co-op. REI has gear, clothing, classes, and advice for camping and glamping, biking and hiking, axing and snacksing, backpacking, and another outdoor thing that rhymes with backpacking. Visit your local REI Co-op or REI.com for the million and one ways you can opt outside. This message is brought to you by NPR sponsor Progressive Insurance. You call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. Tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options within your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Homes.com. You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, local amenities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
One of the premier science fiction writers of the 20th century, Octavia Butler imagined worlds that were radically different and strikingly similar to the one we live in today.
For our Black History Month special series, The Cautionary Tales and the Reasons for Hope that Octavia Butler left us.
Listen now to the Throughline podcast from NPR.
I went to a sort of boutique-y cinema that we have here in Wellington, had a massive thing of popcorn that I ate all of and felt a bit ill, but enjoyed it, yeah. And then we went and got a margarita at a nearby bar afterwards talked about the movie, and then I went home by, you're like 10.
That's Bridie Whitten. She's a health journalist living in Wellington, New Zealand. Doing what we all wish we could be doing right now, seeing movies, going to bars, walking around without a mask on. You know, New Zealand, where she is, it's a COVID success story. That country has pretty successfully suppressed community spread of COVID since last year. New Zealand also has a pretty thorough quarantine system for travelers who are coming back to the country so they can catch new cases. And while there have been some outbreaks, the government has been able to control them. New Zealand is a country of 5 million people. And since the start of this pandemic, there have only been 2,500 cases in that country and only 26 deaths. That means that life in New Zealand right now, it's pretty normal. I talked with Bridie about what it's like living that way while the rest of the world has changed so much. As you're able to walk through New Zealand and just kind of do whatever you want, you're not seeing masks, people are living their lives, does that feel normal? Or does it feel entirely abnormal because you're seeing the rest of the world not being able to do what y'all are doing?
Yeah, that's a tough one. It's been Groundhog Day for everyone for quite a while. Maybe things have calmed down a bit, but I think everyone is kind of on high alert and everyone's kind of ready to change alert levels at any time. Everyone's kind of knows what they have to do and is sort of kind of knows the stakes, I think, because of what we're seeing overseas. So life is normal, but people aren't sort of, you know, completely relaxed.
Gotcha. What do y'all think of us? What are folks in New Zealand saying about America and the West maybe even? And just like, yeah, what do y'all think of us and our situation right now?
Well, I mean, you've obviously had your big election pretty recently. I mean, the whole world was watching and there was obviously so much at stake. For the world and particularly with this virus happening. I think, like, I personally feel, and I think everyone else feels, like, really, really sad for what has happened and really sorry that that's happened to you guys. I think because New Zealand is so lucky because it is isolated and it is, we have a relatively small population. So it is quite easy to manage public opinion. And you cannot sort of get those huge pockets of diverse opinion because we're all mixed in together.
Mm.
And you can't actually just, you know, say, I live over here and I'm like this and I'm never going to see anyone not like me and I hate everyone else. You can't actually do that here. I think most people are pretty aware that our COVID situation is because of our high trust in the government. We've had really good access to experts who are like talking around the clock and on your TV and you know, you might see them out at a cafe, you know, like it's so small, your distance to authorities and prime minister and things like that.
Yeah. Is there anything you want to say to Americans or a lot of other folks hearing this chat right now? Anything you want to say to them from the other side of the pandemic, where y'all seem to be right now?
God, I just am amazed everyone's keeping their heads together if they are by this point, because it just looks so stressful for you guys and so anxiety inducing, and especially because we've seen a little bit about anti-masking rallies and people saying I should be able to do whatever I want, and just thinking about poor Americans that maybe have asthma or health issues or, you know, family members dying, and then you have to live with these people every day and see them being crazy and saying, you know, it's a hoax or whatever, the virus is a hoax. And I don't know, the fact you've made it this far without losing it is you should be really proud of yourself, because that's pretty hard.
Thank you. I hope things continue to be close to normal for y'all out there, or as normal as they can be. And I'm taking inspiration from you talking about what it feels like to be over it. And I will be in a movie theater at some point soon, just like you have been.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I think in honor of New Zealand, I'm going to go queue up Lord of the Rings on my TV right now.
Yeah, that's great.
Thanks again to Bridie Whitten. She is a journalist in Wellington, New Zealand.
Now it's time to end the show as we always do. Every week, listeners share the best thing that happened to them all week. We encourage folks to brag, and they do. Let's hear a few of those submissions.
Hi, Sam. My name is Emily, and I live in Hong Kong. And the best part of my week was being able to celebrate Chinese Lunar New Year with my husband's family. And even though I don't really speak Cantonese that well, and his family doesn't really speak English that well, we were still able to get together and just really feel like we are all one big family and we all love each other.
Hi, Sam. The best part of my week was hearing my boyfriend yell something that I cannot repeat on the radio, but it happened when our kitchen lights finally turned on after we were out power for over 60 hours due to record cold temperatures here in Texas. We're warm now and generally more thankful and appreciative for our daily comforts.
Hi, Sam. This is Addison.
And this is Lorelai.
And their mom, Joanna.
The best part of our week was getting puppies!
Hi, this is Stacy in San Diego. The best part of my week was on Sunday, friends of ours invited us on a masked, socially distanced boat ride. It was amazing for my family, which has hardly left our house in the last year, to be outdoors, enjoying the sunshine and the fresh air. But the most magical moment came when we were near the ocean and a pod of dolphins emerged, swam near our boat for several minutes, and playfully cavorted as we screeched in delight, enjoying the sheer amazement of seeing these creatures in the wild.
Hey, Sam. This is Kathy from Atlanta, Georgia. The best thing to happen to me this week is that I just found out from a text that my mom sent me that she got an appointment for the first shot of the COVID vaccine, and it's just been the best news because I've been really worried and stressed about her health, and I'm just so happy to know that she'll be getting the vaccine. So thank you so much for all you do. Your show means the world.
Thanks so much for your show. Bye-bye.
Say bye.
Bye!
I really enjoyed those. Happy Lunar New Year to all of those who celebrated. Also, everyone out there in Texas getting power back, still waiting to get power back, we're thinking of you and hoping you're safe. Shout out to getting puppies. Shout out to dolphins and vaccines. All right, thanks to all those listeners you heard just there. Kathy, Stacy, Addison, Lorelai, Joanna, Rachel, and Emily. Listeners, you can be in this segment. Just record the sound of your voice on your phone, sharing the best part of your week, and then send that voice memo to me via email, samsanders@npr.org. samsanders@npr.org. All right, this week, It's Been a Minute was produced by Janae West, Andrea Gutierrez, and Sylvie Douglas. Our intern is Liam McBain. Our fearless editor is Jordana Hochman. Our director of programming is Steve Nelson. And our big boss is NPR's senior VP of programming, Anya Grundman. Listeners, till next time, be good to yourselves. I'm Sam Sanders. We'll talk soon.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Lisa. Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Visit Lisa.com to learn more. That's LEESA.com.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell and show up exactly the way you want to. Customize your online store to your style. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/NPR.
This message comes from The Run Through with Vogue. Listen as designers, Vogue editors, and industry icons like Erykah Badu and Florence Pugh have in-depth conversations about fashion and culture. New episodes are released each Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.